Live at 5 Sports with Todd and Suhan, brought to you by Prairie's Edge Casino Resort. Jim, yesterday we talked a little about the Ohtani gambling scandal that's going on, and now the NBA has their own scandal, Jonte Murray being investigated by the NBA for wagering on games.
Yes, and the details are pretty damning. It looks like that somebody was placing huge prop bets on how many minutes he might play or how productive he might play in games where he was like refusing to shoot or asking out early with an injury. It's, you know, the Ohtani thing. Ohtani is claiming complete innocence. We're going to have to wait to see how the investigation goes to really know much more about that. He certainly professed his innocence yesterday. This one, I don't know that, wriggling out of this one. This one looks pretty obvious.
Yeah, I mean, he's a reserve who hardly plays at all. So to place prop bets through proxies, you know, it's just a little obvious. I saw an ESPN gambling expert who's been covering it for him for about 15 years saying that there aren't that many prop bets bet on guys who aren't starters in big names, so it's pretty easy to pick it out.
Yes, and the amounts were really high, and that's a big red flag. And, you know, listen, you know, all the gambling companies monitor this stuff. They don't want to get ripped off. Obviously, the FBI doesn't want to see cheating in this way. The sports leagues, this is the last thing they want to deal with. But, I mean, this is in terms of the NBA, this is a perfect guy to use as an example, you know, and I mean, nobody really knows him. They can punish the heck out of him and set a great example for the rest of the league.
Right, but then don't they set a precedent? What if it is somebody they care about that gets caught up in a gambling web in future years? I don't see this slowing down. I think we're only going to see more of it.
Well, I do think that NBA players, good NBA players, make so much money. Unless they have a gambling addiction, they just can't help themselves. There's not really much financial incentive for them to put themselves at risk doing this. You know, now if you're a reserve player and you think you're only going to be in the league for a year, maybe you're dumb enough to think that, you know, that this is a good gambit. But, you know, LeBron James ain't going to get, unless a star player just has a serious gambling problem, they're not going to take this risk.
That does happen, though. I mean, how many millions does Charles Barkley claim that he lost over the years? Like $50 million that he lost. So I hope it doesn't happen.
Yep. Well, we don't know that Charles ever, even as much as Charles gambles and loses, we don't have any evidence he ever did it on the NBA or on like his own personal performance or team.
Right. I'm sure he didn't. You know, I from what I understand, he's a big blackjack player, and that's why he dumped a lot of his fortune for sure. But, you know, I am a little concerned about it as we go down to the college levels. Then, you know, that's where it maybe could be more of a problem with players.
No doubt. And another good reason to pay players. But there are two kinds of people who are going to get in trouble with this, as we're enumerating right now. One is the player who has a gambling addiction, can't help himself, and gets hooked up with the wrong people, and maybe they talk him into doing something he shouldn't do. The other one is the player who just realizes that he's, whether it's college or pro or whatever, or a bench player, they realize this is their only chance to really make a lot of money because they're not good enough.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, it's interesting, back to the Ohtani thing a little bit, this gambling expert I saw on ESPN, you know, that's $4.5 million in losses that he was paying off to the bookie. He said, you don't lose every bet, obviously. He estimated that it was between 80 and 100 million wagered in order to lose $4.5 million to your bookie. 80 to 100 million. Now, that's not interpreter level.
No, yeah. That's not. Yeah. And that's why this, I mean, Ohtani seemed very forthright yesterday, but it doesn't matter. They got to investigate the heck out of him. They got to follow the money. And another thing is, the Ohtani and interpreter aspect of this is just a very small part of a major gambling problem. So this has, you know, this ain't going to be just the MLB investigating. This is a major crime investigation involving different agencies. So if Ohtani did it, he's going to get caught.
No doubt, and that's where this came out, was that there was an FBI investigation into this bookmaker, and then it was, you know, some reporters saw Ohtani's name, and boom, the story came from there. Then
Exactly.
Yeah. Your column about the Twins this morning, a lot of, season begins here, what, Thursday in Kansas City? Talk about your column and the Twins a little bit.
Well, I think, to me, the vocal Twins fan, I don't know about the average Twins fan, the person who actually buys tickets and games, to me, the vocal and online Twins fan are always complaining about whatever might be wrong with the team. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to point out that after the All-Star break last year, this was one of the best offensive teams in baseball. And that was with Buxton and Correa giving them almost nothing. And it was with breaking in some young guys who, you know, were just trying to figure out where the entrance to Target Field was. Mm-hmm. And they were one of the best offensive teams in baseball for the last 2.5 months of the season. If they get Buxton and Correa producing the way they are capable, if Wallner and Julianne and Royce Lewis are as good as I think they are, this team could score a million runs.
Yeah, and in a lot of different ways, too. They have guys that put the ball in play and some power as well. Does their struggles in spring training concern you at all?
No, I don't pay any. If spring training stats mattered, Luke Hughes would be in the Hall of Fame.
I don't even know who that is. You're going to have to go.
Luke Hughes was the guy for a period of time, I think especially when Bill Smith was general manager. Luke Hughes is the guy who would hit 300 or 400 every spring, and then you look up his he was like the backup quarterback, right? He's he led the team to a fourth quarter comeback in the preseason. You got to give him a chance. Well, right. He did it against people who aren't going to be in the NFL. Luke Hughes was a great spring training hitter, and then you go look up his career Major League Baseball stats, and he hit like 210 with no power. I mean,
it's strange. Yep.
I just don't pay any attention to spring training stats.
Yeah, is Alex Kirilloff still a member of the Twins in 25?
It's up to him. Mm. You know, if he could win the job this year and be in the lineup every day, or he could absolutely lose the job and be on his way out by October. You know, it's really up to him. He has the ability to take good at bats, his ability to drive the ball, he has the ability to hit for average and draw walks, but it's time. It's they've been waiting on him for years now, and since I think 2020 is when they called him up for that playoff mm-hmm. game. Santana is there to be kind of a platoon player, but he's also good enough to play every day if Kirilloff can't win the job.
They brought Santana in because they're unsure of Kirilloff, right?
In part as insurance against Kirilloff being injured and not being productive, in part because they really went heavy on platoons last year, and Kirilloff against righties and Santana against lefties makes a lot of sense, in part because they really don't have a true DH, so either of those could end up being a DHing a lot if Correa and Buxton don't need to be DHs. Santana gives them depth at first base, at DH, and he gives them Kirilloff insurance.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin Clark has rightfully so taken over a big part of the spotlight, especially in women's college basketball. But really, Minnesota fans, it was Paige Beckers we thought was going to be Caitlin Clark. And unfortunately, she had a couple of tough knee injuries that kind of derailed her. But she's on fire right now for UConn.
She's on fire, and Gino Auriemma is making a point of saying she's the best player in the nation right now, which is a great debate to have. Because Caitlin Clark might be the greatest college basketball player of all time. Paige Beckers right now is playing phenomenally well. Mm-hmm. Auriemma always thought she was a little too unselfish and wanted her to shoot more. Now she's still a brilliant passer, great, and she's good all over the floor, and she's good defensively, but she is shooting like a superstar right now. Mm-hmm.
And she had a massive following coming out of high school, Instagram followers and so forth. She was one of the front runners, really, a few years back in this explosion of popularity in women's basketball.
Yes, she really drove it, mm-hmm. and for so many reasons. Played with flair, was a winner, great personality, completely unafraid to take on social justice issues, paid homage to her predecessors, especially Lindsey Whalen, went to UConn, where so many of the great players go, knew how to handle attention, knew how to be a public figure, and then Caitlin Clark just blew past her. Mm. But it doesn't mean Paige Beckers isn't great. It just means Caitlin Clark had the greatest career ever.
That's right. Jim, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Live at 5 Sports with Todd and Suhan. Brought to you by Prairie's Edge Casino Resort.